Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh.
CougarCast,
covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board.
Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
Go hard,
go fast.
All right, welcome to CougarCast. My name is Keith Schertz, and I'm here with the 2002 Utah County Name of the Year, according to the Daily Herald, Tosh McIntosh. And we are reeling from the Utah loss, just like everybody else. I don't understand. Why can't we beat Utah? It makes no sense.
There's a lot. You'll hear a lot of my reasons, but they just, they're better prepared every year.
Yeah. So out coaching?
Yeah. So I think out coaching goes into that. I think the players, whether we put this on the coaches or it's the players, I think it's a mix, but the players come into the game in a better mindset.
All right.
So a lot of that's on the coach.
So there's a whole lot of things that we got to worry about, you know, with that game. You know, Utah's taken 9 of the last 12. The three times we've won have been miracles. You know, it's taken the answered prayer and 4th and 18 and George. And so, you know, effectively we've been outplayed. You know, 12 straight years, essentially. And there's no, I mean, it's the truth, right? I mean, I can't make any excuses. It's the truth. And my solace is this, and I don't know if other people find as much solace in it as me, but I love the fact that I think about BYU basketball, and we've won 11 of the last 12 in basketball. And so we've got it going in hoops. And
what's ironic is that's what you fans used to say.
Yeah, it used to be that way. But I'm okay with it because I like basketball better than football.
And to be real, I think I've taken this loss harder than any loss I can remember as a fan in my entire life.
Well, it's a shame. It's a shame. And, you know, good luck to Utah in the next 2 years. I know you Utah fans out there are going to be just as pleased with your victories or losses. Either way, you're going to be more happy to be playing Fresno State than BYU, right? Is that right?
No, that is true. I think the next 2 years, their fans are going to realize that
they missed the
game.
They
were lying to themselves to say they don't care about the rivalry.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're playing Michigan these days, and they're playing Fresno State. And that's bigger. That's more important than playing BYU.
The last several years, one thing that's killed me is I've had a lot of witty things to say after we won and just have not been able to.
Yeah, I know. I hate it when you can't use wit.
Yeah.
I always wait around. I pray for the days when people tell me that they're a podiatrist, and then I can act like they're pediatricians. It's not – I don't know if that's necessarily witty. It's just forcing my it's false stupidity. And yeah. Anyway, it's pretty fun. Anyway, so Cougars go down 2013 final score. Don't need to belabor on it too much, but I do think it's important for us to talk briefly about some of the things that we'll remember from that game. So for me, it's a game of missed opportunities. There's the holding call on the Hine return. There's somehow that ball miraculously did not hit the Utah receiver. Now, we couldn't have advanced it, so it wouldn't have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
But it certainly would have lined us up at like the 22. Although that whole thing was a fluke because if you remember, the snap was bounced.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. But And just a lot of missed opportunities. There was the Fozlev returned it back to like the, what was it, the 8 or 9? And then we didn't get in the end zone. It's a game of missed opportunities, that one.
I mean, we were in their side of the field 8 times.
Yep.
Only scored 13 points. That's just pathetic is the only word I can think of. And then
they got into the red zone 5 times, Tosh, and they only came away 13 points. That's 2 field goals and a touchdown.
So at what point in the game did you start to think, oh no, this is not, this is something to worry about?
The missed field goal. Honestly, I think when Sorensen,
we were down 3-0.
Yeah, it's 3-0. But when Sorensen missed that field goal, I just went, "Oh, goodness sakes!" You know, like that. Just it's always so big, and so I began to have that feeling. And then, you know, honestly, yeah, when it got to be 13-0, that was not good. Halftime, I was not feeling good, but I still wasn't feeling like it was done. The moment it was done was. When Fozlev made the return, we didn't get in the end zone. And it was, what, the fourth down play. We threw to Thornton on a rollout.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, gosh, I don't remember throwing to Thornton all year. And here we are. And I'm sure we did. But in the biggest moment of the season, you're putting the ball in the hands of Thornton. That's where you're going to go with it.
And why... And I've been talking to you about this like crazy, but why is Fozlev not playing? I mean, this year he's become our punt returner.
He's been our toughest player offensively for 3 years.
And the guy, our
receivers. And he was on the same team as Riley Nelson.
our receivers cannot catch the ball.
Yeah.
Fozlev never drops the ball. Like, right. Play the man.
He's had one drop this year, but other than that, like, I mean, he's been incredible. He might actually lead the teams in the least amount of drops.
And if we had a slot receiver in there that was crushing it, sure. But Thornton, he may develop into a good player, but he just looked...
He's not doing anything.
No, he had a lot. He was targeted a lot. Had
the nothing. Two biggest moments of the game, it went to Thornton. And one was covered really well, and the other was just a plain drop, right? And so, I don't know,
And
man.
He had some other drops, too. That I just... Open field drops. There was a...
Ross Apos continues to be frustrating. Skyler Ridley did a little bit better, but isn't doing anything that makes you thrilled that he's a Cougar.
So,
Mitch Matthews had a couple good plays.
To be honest, out of all the things I could point to, the drops are what made me think this is not going our way. Like the second possession, we already Thompson, I believe, had a drop, or maybe it was Ridley, but both of them had drops in that game.
Everyone had drops. Cody had a couple, didn't he?
Well, he had the one, but that was on the last drive. On the first play of the last drive that would have got us probably 15, 20 yards, he drops it in the open field, and it was just like, it's just one of these days. Even
what did you think of the what did you think of the officiating for the game? What was your – I mean, honestly
– So as a fan
– There's a lot of no calls. Yeah. I was kind of surprised. I kept saying, like, you know, there's only one personal foul called.
Yeah, which is – and it was a questionable – it went on the Utes, but it was a questionable personal foul.
I thought it was – I don't know what he said, but I did
– It looked like he was taunting.
It was well after the game, but there was a lot of kind of skirmishes.
And they didn't call anything.
They never called anything the whole game.
So as a fan at the game – I think you get caught up in the emotion, and I was really upset with the officials. But then after I went home and watched some TV replays, a lot of the blown calls that I thought were blown calls weren't as bad as when you're there.
Yeah.
Do I think...
The last play of the game was... That was blown call.
Do I think... Yeah. And do I think that the refs were...
No, they weren't the difference.
They weren't the difference.
No way.
More things went Utah's way, but not in a way that I think we should blame. That happens in football games.
This was just purely, we didn't take our opportunities. Utah took theirs. And when one team takes more opportunities than the other, that team wins. And
we were on the Ute side of the field 8 times.
Yep.
None of those times did the refs stop us. Not even once. And we never got into the end zone.
That's true.
It's just like...
And even if you would have called pass interference... there was absolutely nothing about that last possession that indicated that we were suddenly going to complete a pass.
No. So are you saying that you think that the fans should have thrown trash at Anai and not at the refs?
I think fans shouldn't throw trash. I love – can I just briefly talk about that? I think it's funny the uproar over that, right? Oh, you know, Brian Blecken can be fake baptized. Oh, well, okay. They're just screwing around, guys. Just relax a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
You know, they obviously they're young. They're not thinking about it. Whatever. It's not a big deal. Okay. Oh, this Darren Lucey thing. Well, listen, you know, he's breaking the rules, so what you gonna do, right? And that's the reaction to it. But a few idiots in the stands throw some popcorns at these officials.
And some pom-poms and empty cups, but it wasn't much. Yeah, and so...
And what's the reaction? Oh, well, look who's out of hand, and what's, you know? And I think that's kind of interesting. You know, if I can, you know, the local media, I feel like, has been kind of crappy about that and have been kind of ridiculously critical about that.
Yeah.
I've heard some national media talk about it briefly because it was the same officiating crew that worked the Arizona State-Wisconsin game. And the response for it is John Feinstein, that show, national show. And John Feinstein, what he had to say about it was, boy, if they were throwing trash in Provo, they must have sucked, right? and it wasn't necessarily putting it on the fans. It was just to say, like, wow, that sort of stuff doesn't happen in Provo. And if it happened in that game, boy, there must have been a reason why. The real reason why was because we just lost four in a row to Utah.
It was frustrating.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff going on.
And it wasn't that many fans. And again, it shouldn't. I laugh at the Utes just shock and
the indignation. Yeah,
have they never been to a Jazz game? Like, I think that ironically, Utah, like the state of Utah, probably throws more stuff at refs than any other fan base I've ever seen. Lots of Jazz games as that happened, and so I wasn't shocked. I was disappointed, but anyway, I just thought I'd bring up a little heat.
Well, and I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean, listen. I would never do it. I've never done it. That's not something I would do.
No.
I don't know what possesses people to do it, right? Was I terribly surprised by it? No. Was I terribly disappointed by it? No.
Well, here's the – you know who I actually
blame for it? And I'm not making excuses. They shouldn't have done it, and it's never right to do.
I blame, as I've blamed after every home game this year, the replay man. There was – The replays were the worst. So every bad call or thing we thought was a bad call, we either didn't get a replay or it was a replay that we couldn't see if we were right. So as fans, you just assume that, hey, the reason they're not showing us that replay is because we got ripped off on that call.
Right.
So I think the lack of replays fed
actually
kind of
hurts. Yeah, I do. I agree with that.
To make them think that these are the worst refs we've ever seen.
I agree
seen.
With that. And we only got one look at the what was supposed to be a muffed punt.
Yeah.
You only got one look at it.
Super zoomed
out. And it was way zoomed out, and it definitely looked like it hit him.
Yeah.
And so I was texting, like, my friends who weren't at the game. I was like, did that hit him? And they're like, no, it didn't, you know. And so I just can't believe, you know, when I was there, I was like, really? How did it not hit him? But it so looked like it from the replay we got. And so I'm with you. Even worse, just in terms of in-game stuff. The down and distance guy, whoever's in charge of down and distance, is terrible.
Well, I think it might be the same guy, but Tom Homo actually tweeted that there was human error and that they're changing it.
You need to get two people in there then.
How does anyone have – it was wrong most of the time. The score was wrong. The down
at
and
one
distance
point,
was
yeah,
wrong.
At one point it displayed BYU had 19 points at one point in the game. Anyway. They need to either hire a couple people to do it or stop. You know what? Here's the big thing, right? I bet it's students. I bet they have students running this stuff.
Yeah, no, I think so.
And the thing that's hilarious about this is, you know, they don't let any of the students do anything for BYU TV, right? And I feel like it's like more people are probably watching the stadium thing than BYU TV. And so it's like put some professionals in the stadium, folks.
Okay, back on football, let's say Bronco Mendenhall calls you tomorrow and has you come in to give some advice to the
this might happen
to give some advice to the coaching staff to fix their woes.
Yeah,
what would you address?
All right, so I'm gonna start defense because there's less to say about it. Personally, I felt like the defense at this point they need to be locked in like they were last year, where if we don't play a perfect game, we're probably going to lose, okay? They didn't play a perfect game. They gave up two huge plays, and on both of those drives where Utah got the huge run and the huge pass, they scored a touchdown. So, you know, it's hard to criticize on two blown plays, especially when, you know, Utah only converted one third down the entire
one
game.
One of 15.
So the defense is really good in terms of, like I said, assignment-based football. Okay, but here's some stuff that maybe you haven't thought about. This year, BYU, when their opponents, so our defense, when our when they've had an opponent enter the red zone so far, they are 7 of 7, 100%. We are the worst team in the country in red zone defense. So we've done nothing to kind of stop what's gone on there. And it's not just mostly field goals. It's 5 touchdowns and 2 field goals. So if you can get in the red zone on BYU, you're going to get in. Okay, so far at least. You know, compare that to last year where they were the best team in the country in red zone defense. So 100% of the time, though, we're giving up points. So if the other team gets in the 20, they're scoring. That's one. Two, turnovers. And I've talked about this now. This is my third time. But they don't make big plays, game-changing plays on defense. They just don't do it. They've only forced one turnover this season. It was an interception of no consequence. It happened because it was tipped up and went right to Craig Bills. It wasn't because he was positioned in a particular – it was just some serendipity, right? And even that looked like it might have been a drop, right? And so we've only forced one interception this year. We had several opportunities to actually collect and bring in the ball. They could have had 3 or 4 interceptions against Utah. They never did it.
Right in the hands.
And those things matter because instead of picking it off, right, it was then punted away. And, I mean, that's a 40-yard difference. That's a huge, huge deal. One other one. And I know that they're hitting people pretty hard. But they haven't hit anybody hard enough to make them drop the ball this year. There have been 0 forced fumbles by our defense this year. Okay? So now, they're playing awesome. They don't give up very many points, 19, 20, and 24, right? So they're doing really well in terms of keeping people off the scoreboard in general. Not when they get in the red zone. But in general, the score, you know, of our opponents is pretty low. And so what do you do to change your scheme so that you can actually start forcing fumbles, so that you can start collecting interceptions? And the other one is forcing people to, you know, once it's fourth down in the red zone, people are still converting those fourth downs. We're not stopping fourth downs in the red zone. And so I guess what I'm saying is how do you go from being really disciplined and assignment sound and taking care of business the majority of the time, but never making a big play for your team? How do you suddenly create big plays?
I think part of it is that, and this is an excuse granted, but the fact that we lost both our corners is making us play a lot more vanilla in the secondary. And we've gone back to the 5 years ago BYU defense where it's just keep people in front of you. That being said, though, our safeties.
There was only one sack, though.
Yeah.
They only got to the quarterback once.
Yeah, and that's the second part. I think the best way to cause fumbles is to hit the quarterback. Like that when it's hard to, it takes a little bit of luck, I think, to make running backs fumble. I mean, there's coaching to put your head on the ball, you know, to be stripping it. But
well, not nowadays though. You can't put your head down.
Yeah,
you need to keep
true.
That head up. I mean, yeah, but you don't see very many people like ripping at the ball or doing anything like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and Van Noy has proven in years past that he's amazing at ripping the ball away when he sacks the quarterback. But he got to Wilson tons game, but always right after he threw it.
That's right, and he made 4 or 5 really good licks on
Wilson.
Travis Wilson
was feeling it.
Yeah, there was one time where he's limping off the field, but I so. Defensively, I'm sorry. Like,
I'm shocked. That's where you're going first. Defense, but you made great points.
Your offense is not good. Everyone knows this about your offense. Yeah, I know they ran for a ton against Texas, but we'll talk. I'm going to get to that. But my whole thing is if you're at that point and you're this defense and you got as much experience on there, Sorensen's an experienced safety. Bills is a good safety. Right, you're Wanyonga. I know it's his first year as a starter, but he's a good, solid player. Van Noy is maybe the best outside linebacker to ever step on the campus.
Yeah,
right? Alani Fua, it's his first year, and he's doing well. Okay,
Kafusi.
Right? Kafusi's his first year, but Ethan Manumaliuna.
Yeah.
Okay? So the point is that every D-line's got a senior with a lot of experience. Linebackers has a senior with a lot of experience. Secondary has a senior with a lot of experience. So they ought to be doing something out there, and they need to know at this point that they got to play pretty much perfect if they want to win. Don't you think? I mean, they used to be locked in like that. Last year, there came a point where they're like, hey, like Riley Nelson's our quarterback, and this is just the way it is, so we've got to be darn near perfect. And they were against Utah State, and that's why we won. They were darn near perfect against Boise, and we still lost, right? So they've already got to be locked in that way. And I know that they're capable of it, and so, yeah, I'll criticize them. Two plays over 60 yards. They gave up 14 points. Those two plays led to 14 points. I mean, so it's grading on a curve, and their curve is really high.
Because they're
really good. But they're not making any big plays, and they don't stop anyone in the red zone.
And you can't argue that. Like, I'm still – the fact that they held Utah to 1-for-15 – and they held them to 20 points. We've got to win that game.
Yep.
The offense needs to score more than 13. But you brought up, I mean, they could do more. They have the talent to do more. And the last in the nation in turnovers with the talent we have is really kind of just inexcusable, which is hard for me to say with how well our defense is.
Yeah, well, and that's the point. It's hard to get after them. I understand that. But let's go to offense now. This will all kind of lead to it, but see, you know, with 13 points on the board, you know, it's just, this is courtesy of the guy at Cougar Stats, but BYU had 13 points on 443 yards of offense versus Utah, and since 2001, only six of the 568 teams who earned at least 440 to 450 yards of offense have scored 13 points or fewer.
Okay. That's, yeah.
So six of 568 have been when you get 440 yards, you know, you ought to be able to generate more than 13 points, right? Six teams have only had 13 points or less of 568.
That is inefficient at a incredible level.
Okay. And this isn't just the Utah game. It's a trend. BYU had 40 points on 679 yards of offense versus Texas.
Which sounds really good.
But since 2001, only six of 63 teams who have gotten over 675 yards of offense have scored 40 points or fewer.
So we're really inefficient with turning our yards into points.
So we're gaining yards. We're not scoring. Okay, this is shown in the red zone. We're 1-for-5 passing with the sack against the Utes. We're 2-for-14 passing in the red zone this year. 2-for-14. 2-for-14.
Do you know, on third down, third and seven and longer passing plays,
yeah,
we're 1-for-24 in converting those.
Ugh.
1-for-24 if we throw the ball on third and seven or longer.
Okay. So we can't throw downfield, right? All right, so And let's talk pass efficiency, because I feel like if you're not generating points but you're still getting yards, that comes down to pass efficiency. It's obviously we can run, but there's two tacits of the game. So we've been able to run a little bit. Now we got to figure out how to pass, and especially in the red zone, 2-for-14, for heaven's sakes. So I took a look. I did – this is my own geeky research. A lot of time spent on this. Hopefully people will find it useful. But so Taysom's had five games as a starter, Tosh. Through those five games, he's 75 of 171 for 911 yards, and that's with four touchdowns and five interceptions.
His first five games started.
As the starter. Okay. So this doesn't include his touchdown pass in the first game of last year against
Washington State.
Okay, this is as a starter. So his pass as full-time starter, not sharing any time, any of that, okay? His pass efficiency through five starts is 91.1, okay? 91.1. Riley Nelson threw his five starts, and I'll just I won't go through all the stats, but his pass efficiency was 156.8.
Sheesh.
Okay. Jake Heaps was the worst. I could just end it there. But of all the, and he's still bad, by the way. He's awful.
That's strong. He's had a okay. This last game he did okay, but I'm surprised he's not doing better. And so you can't argue with
he did okay. He's awful, man. I don't. He's awful. I've seen enough Jake Heaps to know what he is. And he's a, anyway. This might be strong, but he's a coward. He's afraid of getting.
You're
hit.
Still mad about him not going after the.
No, I don't care about that as much. What I care about is he doesn't ever stay in there and hang in and throw it and then get drilled like Travis Wilson did.
Yeah.
Right? He is not a tough player. To play football, you have to be tough.
It's true.
Right? I mean, why do you think Bronco couldn't shut up about how tough Riley Nelson was? Because he just went away from the biggest weenie, untough quarterback I've ever seen. No, I mean it.
I can tell you mean it.
Have you seen anybody more afraid to be hit on the field than Jake Heaps?
No, and it's true. And with a little bit with him and with a lot of players, there's great practice players and there's great gamers. And I think it's all mental.
Well, he's the biggest example of that ever.
Yeah.
There's such a separation between practice and game time for Jake Heaps. It's nuts. But anyway, Jake Heaps through his first five starts was pass efficiency of 87.7. So just barely worse than Taysom. Okay. And then if I go through, Max, 139.6. John Beck, 107.9. Matt Barry, 105.6. Brett Ingeman, 127. Brandon Doman, 164.2. Okay. So do you notice something? Everybody else at least cracked 100 besides Taysom. So I wanted to see what this meant then. If his pass efficiency is that bad, it's not quite Jake Heaps bad, but it's in range, okay? And it's certainly worse than Riley Nelson. Wow. Where does that usually stack up for where they finish, right? Does this tell us after five games, does this tell us where they will end up? And in my sense, there's only been one guy who started out pretty poor and then finished strong of that list that I just read of Ingeman, Barry, Doman, Beck, Hall, Heaps, Hill, and Nelson. And it's Beck. John Beck started out a little bit rough, but then
he became incredibly accurate.
Yeah, he became incredible by the end of his career. So I got thinking about what would happen if you had John Beck in a go fast, go hard scenario, right? I think he would have struggled with it. I think Beck, what he was awesome at was reading defenses, figuring out where the blitz was coming from, looking one way, turning and throwing, and just totally manipulating a defense.
Yeah.
I don't know if you even do that in go fast, go hard. Have you ever seen – does Taysom even know what wide receiver progressions are?
It seems like he's at his best when they roll him out and he only has to read one receiver.
Correct.
And he's just deciding, do I run or do I pass it to this receiver?
Or throw it away.
Yeah.
Right? I mean – yeah, I don't see him reading defenses at all. Okay, and I don't think that's his fault. I don't think he's taught to do it. I think he's taught you have your read, right? Go to either option one or option two based on where this guy goes. That's
and
it.
Even on his pass plays, he's faking a run, so he really doesn't have the time, O-line wise, or because he's having to really sell the fake to read the defense. That's not how our offense, and that could be. I think play calling and the scheme we have him running explains a lot of his completion percentage woes.
Right.
That's what gives me – maybe I'm just talking myself into
– well, so all I'm saying is that everyone stayed within 10 to 15 points of where they started except for John Beck. John Beck improved by like 40 points, okay, for his career. So – the question is Taysom Hill John Beck, right? If not, then he's like everyone else, and that's fine. But that also tells us that at his max, he is a 105 passer, okay? You know what that makes him? That makes him Matt Barry.
We can't forget about his legs, though. I think that a quarterback needs to pass, but I think that this week, because we lost the Utah game, too many people are only focusing on his arm stats and forgetting that
the guy can run unlike anybody we've ever had. We only had two big offensive plays, and by big, I mean over, what, like 35 yards. And one of them was because he just scrambled and ran a long way.
He almost had 100 yards rushing again.
Yeah.
You know, he had about 5 yards a carry.
Mm-hmm. So the only one to compare him to on that is Riley. And he is a better runner than Riley through, you know, through five. He's gained almost twice as many yards. He's ran an extra 30 times than him.
So I hate.
And like three touchdowns. So he's, you know, he's had five touchdowns as a running quarterback.
I hate that I'm asking this question, but I know enough people are talking about it that do you consider putting Ammon Olsen in at this point?
I think they should.
So you're
I'm already
considering
there.
It. You're there.
I'm there. Yeah. Because if Jamal's out for a little bit and stuff, why can't he be a running back? Just put Taysom as a running back.
Ah, he's not a running back.
What's so different about the skill sets? He's basically a running back now.
No, I hear you. If we put him,
I bet Jamal could complete one in three passes. Tosh, since 1968, there's never been a quarterback with this low of a completion percentage at BYU.
That's before
Lavelle Edwards. Tosh, since 2001, there have been 12 occasions where BYU has passed and finished a game with a pass efficiency of under 80. Okay, all three games this year, under 80. So three of those 12 have been with Taysom.
So only nine besides this year.
Yes.
And three straight. Holy smokes. I just...
So like an average of one a year, and we've rattled off three in a row.
When you decide to, in my mind though, when you decide to start a sophomore, you've got to at least give him half the season. Because if you bench him and you bench him for a guy that's not a senior that's going to graduate this year, and mentally the guy's going to transfer or he's just going to be, I just think it's not a good mental place.
I understand that and I get that. I think we know what he is as a passer. I know what Taysom Hill gives us at this point. I'm not betting on him improving the way John Beck did. I think he's going to be like everyone else. I think we know what he is. And I don't think that you can be a 10-win program with a quarterback who's going to have a pass efficiency of 105.
And see, the thing that I was getting spring reports and posting those on Cougar Board about that he was having accuracy issues in fall ball. And I was getting eaten up. Like, oh, don't start that already. You're just trying to get a controversy. Like,
no.
Taysom's our man.
Truth is truth, but man. And I'm a numbers guy.
And so
I know potential is there and whatever. People feel great about him because he went to Stanford and whatever.
And what worries me is that we talked about there's some players that are practice players and game players. He's consistent in both. He has accuracy issues in practice.
Yeah.
And then he has accuracy issues in games. But the other side of that is he's a sophomore who's coming off a serious knee injury.
Yep.
He can run well. I just say let's give him half the season. So
okay.
At least,
well, and that's fine. And I'm sure he'll go out and I'm sure they're going to try to throw against Middle Tennessee State. And I'm sure that they'll do better. If they don't do better against Middle Tennessee State, it's over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
Yes. Ammon Olsen time.
No, I agree. But we'll do better. Like, we're going to do better. Middle Tennessee State, and maybe I'm way overlooking.
But here's the thing, right? The problem that we've seen the last little while is we've stuck with guys for long. When we've known what they were, we've stuck with them because, hey, they're young. We got to see if they'll get better, right? People genuinely don't get better except for John Beck. Okay, Heaps is still Heaps. It doesn't matter that he's at Kansas. He's still Jake Heaps. Okay, Riley Nelson was Riley Nelson the whole way. He just happened to be slightly better than Jake Heaps.
And he got a broken back. But why did we keep riding with that guy after he had a broken back? I'll never know.
Well, but then we held on to him too long. We went to Taysom. And he was better than Riley, at least a broken back Riley. Right?
Then we went to Lark, and it was better than Riley. So all I'm saying is I feel like when you know when someone is, you know, you can either do one of two things. You either need to change your scheme or you got to change the guy. And so they're not going to change the scheme. And they can't.
I think about Middle Tennessee State, though, that they need to throw the ball well over half the time.
They won't.
No, they won't. But just because we can run on these guys, like I
it doesn't prove anything to run.
It doesn't prove anything to run, and we need to A, to see what we got in Taysom.
Yep.
B, what I think, what the optimist in me thinks happens, build some confidence in that guy. He needs to see some catches. He needs to see him.
His receivers have been atrocious.
At an unbelievable level. At a level that I can't remember. And I really like.
As bad as I've ever seen at BYU.
Yeah. I mean, they had 8 drops in the Utah game alone.
Right. No, they're up to 21 this season. 21 drops in 3 games. We're dropping 7 passes a game.
I think
so. And it's everybody. Everybody that's had a pass thrown to them this year has dropped it.
The only good news on that while we're talking is that I hear in practice that their freshman, Mike Davis, who is the same name as the Texas guy.
Yeah.
There is a guy, Mike Davis, who's a freshman. And Colby Pearson are amazing. But the coaches just want to redshirt those guys.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't think we have good receivers.
Yeah.
Or
well,
is it coaching? But this coach has a great track record.
But he has a great track record as an air raid offensive coordinator. He's doing something completely different. Okay? Imagine being a boxer and then suddenly deciding to say, you know what, I'm going to start trying southpaw because it's harder for the guy to measure. They don't fight southpaws that often. It's hard to measure yourself against that. So I'm going to start trying to throw my lefts as my power punch. He's trying a completely different game plan. He's never done this before.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my actual thing. And I know I just laid into Taysom a little bit, okay? But this is my actual take on this. I actually think go hard, go fast can work. I don't have a problem with the scheme. I don't necessarily have a problem with the players that we have to fit the scheme. I feel pretty okay about both of that scenario. So feel good about the scheme, feel good about the players, right? And I feel pretty good about Robert and I because I know that he has been successful. But I don't feel good about the way they're executing the scheme. And this is what I mean by that. I don't know that they have the capability or tools to make adjustments with go hard, go fast. Meaning, Utah plays BYU and puts 8 or even 9 in the box, right?
Yeah.
I'm telling you that they pinched on defense. And by pinch, I mean blitzes up the middle with their linebackers, block up that A and B gap, make them go outside, right? Don't let them run up the middle. And they pinched the majority of the time, and I'm unsure that we did anything whatsoever to try to adjust to that defensive strategy. Because you want to know why? We're so busy sending in the next call, I don't know we have time to make adjustments.
There's not enough time. Like the
17 seconds!
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There were times I paid attention to it, because why not? Well, there's so many plays, I have opportunity to pay attention. Right? Taysom's handing the ball off and looking to the sideline. He's not even seeing where Jamal ends up. He's looking to the sideline trying to get the next play in.
Yeah. There's no way that there's enough time.
You're calling your play before the one that you're in is over?
Anai doesn't have even the time to be able to think back on that pass play and how what would be a play to take advantage of what their tendencies
are
doing. Or
maybe we can set them up, right? On first down, so what I understand and what I envision for how they run this, right, is there's just a sheet that says, okay, on our first down, so we're going to step out and let's say we're on our own 20. Then this is the play we'll call in that circumstance. Then we'll see what happens with that, okay? And it's like a choose-your-own-adventure book, okay? Then based on what happens, you have 3 or 4 plays that are sitting in front of you, okay? And you call it based upon whatever has happened for your side.
You're not considering what the defense is showing. You're not considering what the defense does. You don't have time to do that because you're getting a play in and getting the snap off every 17 seconds. Right? We're the fastest paced team in the country. We're getting plays off. The next closest team is getting them off in 18 seconds. We're faster by an entire second. Right? So they've really figured out how to get these plays through, and it has to be that they've set it up like choose your own adventure. Right? I mean, it has to be that way, but that doesn't allow any opportunity for adjustments. It doesn't allow any opportunity for your players to read the defense, to figure out where there's holes, to do any of that.
And it's working amazingly in the open field, but I think when it comes down to when the field gets shortened and they get in the red zone, that's where reading the defense and taking when the gaps get tighter, the space is limited, that's where reading the defense is at a premium, and I really think that the proof's in the pudding that's where the go fast, go hard is failing at this point.
Yeah, 2 for 14 passing in the red zone. Right, they're a wonderful team. If the goal of the game was to get from your own 20 to the other 20,
they're amazing.
They're terrific. Okay, they're getting a lot of yards. So I don't know that necessarily there's a problem with the scheme or even the players. Right, I'm unsure, and I think a lot of people forget about this, but this is the coach's third game trying to call plays like this. And is Anai even calling the plays, or does he have his assistant who's above say, okay, in this circumstance, it's this?
And
does that make sense? Is there any adjusting that goes on?
I thought it was weird when he said he was going to call from the field because pretty much every O coordinator is in the booth. But with this style, he's not making adjustments. Like, so he can call from the field. Like, I think he's telling those sign guys what to do.
Let's go quick.
But it's already planned. We got a few more minutes here. Let's give a few minutes to Middle Tennessee. What's your prediction for score? I want two things. Prediction on score and what thing you're looking for as a BYU fan that's going to give you hope.
Well, so my biggest thing is score in this game. Middle Tennessee is kind of an interesting – they're an unknown in my mind. They're Conference USA. I haven't seen them on TV. I've taken a look at their stats. Nothing particularly spectacular. Nothing to be scared. Now, 3-1. One game was against a Division II team. They beat Florida Atlantic. They beat Memphis. They beat Memphis by 2 at home. They beat Florida Atlantic on the road by 7. Okay. They lost on the road to North Carolina by 20. So where does BYU measure in all that? Do you think BYU is a better team than the three opponents they face?
Yeah.
Okay, so now the three Division I opponents they face. And so I think so too, right? Even though BYU is 1-2, I think they're probably a better program than North Carolina at this point. Though North Carolina is good. It's not necessarily a slight – we might be in the same range as North Carolina at this point. So if North Carolina won by 20 and we're at home, right, I don't know. I think our defense is probably a little bit better, although, you know, they seem to be able to score a little bit. I'll say BYU will hold them to 13 points, and I think our offense will put together 31. 31-13 BYU.
All right, I'm going to go for – I think we score 42. 42-10. I think it's going to be one of those type of games. And the thing I'm looking for, and I think every fan is looking for, is what is Taysom's completion percentage? That this game needs to be a confidence booster for him in that regard. If he goes out there and has another 30% completion, then I think his confidence is shot.
No, I've said this to you, and I already said it in this. If he does the same, if he's similar, if he finishes the game with one pick, right? If this is where we're at with him, you know, he's good for an interception a game and for 1-3 passing. We're done. I'm done with Taysom Hill.
All right.
For me, I'm done with him. I don't need to see anymore.
Well, if he can't pass against Middle Tennessee State, then what are we doing? Like,
At that point, we either got to trade Taysom Hill out or we got to change our scheme. I don't know if you can change scheme at this point, right? I mean, you're in the middle of the season. So
here's my reason to hate Middle Tennessee State. I know our listeners like these, but I had to search long and hard for a reason for our fan base to
hate.
There
isn't much there, right? Yeah. I mean, you don't have that much to hate about Middle Tennessee State.
The one that I found is that a man who claims to invent the internet and has really done a lot to profit off of global warming has been a man by the name of Al Gore, who graduated from Middle Tennessee State.
There you go. Well, and so, and you know, depending on where you stand on that, that might be enough for you.
I think it's, I just throw that out. I don't hate Al Gore, like, really, but I there's a lot of things about him that make me laugh, and I think that
You're playing to your audience.
Yeah, playing to the audience. Most of our audience is going to be going wild this Friday because of their hatred for Al Gore.
Okay, all right. All right, we'll go with that one. Also, Blue Raiders, I think, is just a terrible nickname. If you add blue in front of something, somehow it happens quite a bit. But I always think if you add blue in front of something, it's the word fart, right? Which, of course, is when you...
The blue darts.
Blue dart, yeah. If you don't know what that is, ask a Boy Scout. And then, you know, the other one, or blue, the Blue Raiders, because they're sad.
Yeah.
Is that why they're blue?
I'm not.
It's not necessarily the color. It's just how they feel inside. They raid things and they steal stuff, but they don't know why they
they're
do it.
They're depressed about their life's choices.
They're there. It's what God put them on earth to do, to raid things, but they're not happy about this. Bronco Fireside Talk for the week. Entitled "Finding Life Seagulls for the Crickets." There you go, and so, you know, tough week, short week. Honestly, BYU should play well. I you know, if they can't handle themselves against some kind of a middle of the road or maybe top half Conference USA team, then we've got a lot of problems, and they should be fine. I think coming off a tough loss like that, they usually regroup pretty well. We've started 1-2 several times since Bronco's
Seven
been the coach
out of the last 10.
So it's the way it goes. We usually ramp it up down the stretch of the year, and so that's the way it is. You know, with Independence, we're always going to have tough first three games.
Yeah.
Always, right? We're never going to be able to give ourselves warm-ups. Yeah. So it's just the way it is.
This game comes at a good time where we need this win. The team needs the win. Everyone needs this win.
Yeah.
And so I think it comes at a good time.
Is there a chance that they can win, but it can still be kind of a bad thing?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. But okay. I think that's possible. But I really think we're going to roll.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Get in touch with us at CougarCast on Twitter. At Lehigh Roller on Twitter, if you want to get involved with Tosh. Cougar Board, you can find Mr. Tosh McIntosh doing his thing there. What's your handle?
4Mac.
Ooh, 4Mac.
One of the few people on Cougar Board who I think is not afraid to reveal his identity.
Why are people afraid to reveal their identity?
I don't know, but I'm not ashamed.
And I'm on there as CougarCast. I don't do as much. In fact, if I go on there, I usually put up something goofy. but anyway, and then anyway, you can also email us, cougarcast@gmail.com. Anyway, we appreciate your time and listening to us, and I hope that you have a good week, and go Cougars.